problems with our Zia country off the air.
Iowa's over. And what did Sly Stallone call it in Rambo First Blood? That's right. So Cruz, his win preserves his status as a viable candidate. And Trump at number two doesn't thrill his fans, but he's still in the game to stay. And who would have guessed? Little Marco Rubio at a strong three. Is Trump Cruz's John the Baptist? Not to sound heretical here, but the delegates are well spread out. So now we have our three horsemen of the Prezpocalypse 16. The voting was even through a wildly divided field. This shows the raw virility and staying power of the GOP field. The measure of Trump is how he now handles defeat. Now, for Hillary and General Bernie Sanders, a virtual tie. Unbelievable. What comfort can she draw from an almost exact total? And if you get rid of the flips and the coin tosses, he would be ahead a little bit. At least Cruz could claim to eke out a 4% win. So what's the future of the Democratic Party? A veracity-challenged wife of a dissembling former president who could be indicted any day now? Or not at all? Or is it on to what many Democrats have espoused for decades, open socialism with Uncle Bernie? Meanwhile, O'Malley and Huckabee drop out. But shouldn't many of the other GOP candidates consider the same? Well, I can tell you one thing, Mike McKay. The GOP is still waiting to exhale.
Well, it was an interesting race, wasn't it? Finally, though, we have something to talk about beyond just the polls.
Something substantial. What was your takeaway?
Well, it was I think that Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders in a virtual tie. I think that considering the fact that historically Hillary Clinton hasn't done well in Iowa, she might be breathing a sigh of relief. Although, as Bernie Sanders quite rightly pointed out 6 months ago, he was about 40 points behind. So obviously his camp's got to be very, very excited. On the Republican side, it's interesting. The Republican governor of Iowa said to the people who elected him, don't vote for Ted Cruz, and yet they did. And Ted Cruz comes away with a 4-point win over Donald Trump.
That's huge.
It is. It is. Donald Trump was remarkably gracious in defeat, but not calling it a defeat. But at the same time, he does hold a big lead in New Hampshire. So
in the overall, and so. Is this for Hillary? Is this like getting a note from the governor? I'm giving you an extra day on death row.
I wouldn't characterize it that way. In fact, I think most political pundits would say that a good, strong race is good for the party, as long as they're not tearing each other apart. I thought it was very interesting. I was hearing yesterday that the Clinton campaign called Bernie Sanders one of the most negative campaigns in history. I thought that was a case of hyperbole. But at the same time, in fact, I think the opposite is true. I think it's a fairly clean campaign in a way, back and forth.
Given all of what he has to work with, wasn't he remarkably clean?
Yeah. That's I agree. And but it's interesting the way things break down within the Democratic Party, who voted for whom. Seniors, older people, overwhelmingly supported Hillary Clinton. Younger people, overwhelmingly supported Bernie Sanders.
Including young women.
Young women and young men, young people in general.
She had to be a little surprised by that.
Well, you know, it is one race. We'll see what happens from here.
Well, okay, so don't overplay the meaning of this.
It's just begun. Finally, it has begun.
Reminds me of a Carpenter song.
It's only just begun.
Yes.
Huh?
Yeah. So any predictions based on this? I mean, there's got to be more GOP defections, right? There's got to be more. And did you hear Dr. Carson went home to get a change of clothes? I thought that was bizarre.
He did?
Yeah.
Didn't he pack a bag?
Well, I was thinking about this, and this is brand new to the guy. He probably just wanted to get out of town to take a breath.
Maybe the results were so poor he soiled his pants.
That could be.
I don't know, but
good call.
You know, Ben Carson obviously was performing very, very well earlier on, but now he has been starting to fade for quite some time. You know, and what many people are predicting, of course, what happened to Donald Trump, which has not yet happened, even though he finished second. I mean, he's still very much alive in this particular race, but the happiest person in the aside from Ted Cruz is Marco Rubio.
He comes out really and establishes himself as nipping at the heels of the Donald.
Yeah, very close in terms of actual votes and same amount of delegates. Comes away with 7, I believe, right? Each of them?
7 and 7, or did it go up to 8?
Because Cruz is 8, and then I believe Trump and Rubio are at 7.
Then all right, so I looked this thing up, and it says in USA Today, Bush's final rally interrupted by seat fillers demanding to be paid. A little flyer showed up early Monday morning on social media, a handful of Twitter users supporting various Republican presidential candidates tweeted a photo of a slip of paper with a headline, $$$$$, earn fast cash today, $$$$, and an offer for $25 an hour to attend a Bush rally, his final campaign journey. And it says underneath it, seat fillers needed today, February 1 at 12 p.m. for campaign event, 25 an hour, 2 hours max. Bring your friends, first come, first serve, please be prompt. Embassy Suites by Hilton Central Atrium, Des Moines, Iowa. For more information, contact Dale Herbert Events at gmail.com. Report to Dale at the entrance of the Jeb Bush rally. That is so funny. But you know, it kind of makes you wonder who did it. I mean, I would think that, personally, I don't think that Trump would need to do that. I mean, he's no danger. But here what is purported to be a clip from that.
I want to thank Governor Brandt for coming.
So they're demanding their money, but in any event, Jeb Bush is, I mean, you know, just to see him there, he's there with his stupid sweater with a turn up collar, you know. His somebody needs to help him with his wardrobe. I mean, these sweaters are not really that hip. If he's a little bit cold, I mean, go get a coat or go get a leather jacket or something. Put a little masculinity on yourself. That's just my take. 523-1450 if you're a real lover of Jeb Bush. But I was thinking, you know, the Bush family let us down. You remember Papa Bush's promise, no new taxes, and then he raised taxes and he didn't get reelected. And, you know, he was moderate. His son didn't know what being a conservative was. I guess Jeb was supposed to be more conservative, but I mean, how did that work out? So let's get rid of the dynasties, please. Let's get rid of Hillary. Let's get rid of the Bushes. Let's move on to new and uncharted territory, a new family of some kind. All right, here's Trump's statements. Number two here. Hertz rent a car. Check this out.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you very much. I love you people. I love you people. Thank you. Unbelievable. I have to start by saying I absolutely love the people of Iowa. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. So, on June 16th, when we started this journey, there were 17 candidates. I was told by everybody, do not go to Iowa. You could never finish even in the top 10. And I said, but I have friends in Iowa. I know a lot of people in Iowa. I think they'll really like me. Let's give it a shot. They said, don't do it. I said, I have to do it. And we finished second. And I want to tell you something. I'm just honored. I'm really honored. And I want to congratulate Ted, and I want to congratulate all of the incredible candidates, including Mike Huckabee, who's become a really good friend of mine. So congratulations to everybody. Congratulations.
Huckabee for VP.
I want to thank all of the folks that worked with us. We had a great team, and we will continue to have a great team. And we're just so happy with the way everything worked out. And most importantly, I have to thank my wife and Laura and Eric and Vanessa and Don. They went out and they were doing speeches. And in fact, Don and Eric, I think you did about 6 speeches today. So I just want to thank my family. They have been so amazing and so supportive. And we've had every indication. We're going now on. We have a poll. We're at 28 points ahead. Okay? New Hampshire, we love New Hampshire. We love South Carolina. And we're leaving tonight. And tomorrow afternoon, we'll be in New Hampshire. And that'll be something special. It's going to be a great week. And we're going to be up here next week. And I think we're going to be proclaiming victory, I hope. I will say this. I don't know who's going to win between Bernie and Hillary. I don't know what's going to happen with Hillary. She's got other problems, maybe bigger than the problems she's got in terms of nominations. But we've had so many different indications and polls that we beat her, and we beat her easily. And we will go on to get the Republican nomination, and we will go on to easily beat Hillary or Bernie or whoever the hell they throw up there. Iowa, we love you. We thank you. You're special. We will be back many, many times. In fact, I think I might come here and buy a farm. I love it. Okay? Thank you. Thank you, everybody. Thank you.
Great speech, huh? I mean, come on. Everybody was expecting him to throw a tantrum, and he showed a lot of class there. Is that the Trump that you could see in the White House? I don't know. Well, I want to tell you something. I love my Republican candidates, even the worst, even Jeb Bush, who acts like he just showed up on his, what are those things called, big wheel? The little kid's tricycle, plastic tricycle. Jeb Bush would be 1,000 times better than Hillary, wouldn't he? I don't know. I mean, you got to give these people some props, you know? It's a tough race. I understand Dr. Carson is disappointed. You know, the operation didn't go as planned, if you'll pardon my pun. But the fact of the matter is, Carson, it's a hard thing to start off running for president as your first introduction to political life. All right, here's a little bit. Well, I'll have some from Rubio. I know there's some Rubio lovers out there. But Donna, are you happy now? Satisfied? I hope you are. Well, 642 Kelly O'Connell. It's 29 degrees outside, by the way, and a little bit nippy. Just bundle up. And AM Las Cruces 1450 KOBE Kelly O'Connell 523 1450. We'll be back. But this is a beautiful piece from Tom Scott. Well, I was wondering, I mean, could there be some sort of an agreement that's crafted or kind of pounded out by the top three, the three horsemen of this Prezpocalypse 16? Kind of makes you wonder, doesn't it? All right, here's a little bit from Marco Rubio, but not too much. Marco. Isn't Marco Rubio a lovable guy? He's like a teddy bear. Incredible, huh? Got his whole family there.
Thank you. Not your name. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Go. So this is the moment they said would never happen.
Please tell me that you're not bragging about coming in third.
We had no chance. For months they told us because we offered too much optimism in a time of anger, we had no chance. For months they told us.
All right, so that's the sum total of it. Anyway, he should be proud of himself. He's in the mix. He's right behind, nipping on the heels of the Donald. All right, here is some Ted Cruz for you. A little bit of red meat for you Cruz lovers out there, especially Donna.
Let me first of all say, to God be the glory.
Yeah, baby.
Tonight is a victory for the grassroots. Tonight is a victory for courageous conservatives across Iowa and all across this great nation. Tonight, the state of Iowa has spoken. Iowa has sent notice that the Republican nominee and the next president of the United States will not be chosen by the media. Will not be chosen by the Washington establishment. Will not be chosen by the lobbyists, but will be chosen by the most incredible, powerful force where all sovereignty resides in our nation, by we the people, the American people.
Well, can't argue with that logic. He's a constitutionalist, I guess. But it was, I don't know, it was fun, wasn't it? Kind of the buildup was even more fun. But the idea that Bernie Sanders, I mean, something happened in those coin flips. I don't claim to understand this. And I realized it. Who was it got burned on the coin flip? Was it the Packers? A couple of burned coin flips this year. But I think that the idea that Hillary gets up and says she won, just kind of like, you know. All right, here, I got a little comedy for you.
Back of this young girl that was engaged, and she said, me and my fiancé are never going to be like you. I said, oh, really? What makes you think that? She said, because he loves me, my fiancé. He can't get enough of me. We went to a restaurant, and they brought us to a booth, and he sat beside me instead of across from me because he loves me so much. I said, he sat beside you so he didn't have to look at you. He sat beside you because somewhere in his line of vision was a television set with a sporting event going on.
And Marco Rubio, the lovable Marco Rubio, the little squeeze toy, is being touted as the champion of a battered Republican establishment. So he comes in number three. But I got to tell you, I would prefer either Trump or Cruz at this point. I mean, obviously, if Trump comes in second here, it doesn't really mean that much. But a win would have been nice for his followers and for his prospects, but he hasn't really started dumping a lot of cash into this thing yet, has he? But Rubio is the guy that would make a deal, and he's the guy that wanted to do grant an amnesty. And I mean, I do think that if Cruz got in, I would support him 100% because I like his constitutionalism and him getting up. And what I hope that he does during the campaign is educate people. Popular sovereignty is one of the most important ideas in the history of the West, and it's what our country stands for. And you've got somebody like, you know, I don't know, Hillary Clinton standing up and acting like she's a member of a royal family, you know, and her husband gave a speech the other day. He was shaking. His voice was weak. You know, I mean, he acts like he's at the end of the line. But, you know, these dynasties are no good because people arise up and enter into political life, and they rise or fall on their own merits. But the family benefits from that. It's like the Kennedys, you know. And so I don't, I just don't think it benefits us to bring people in and give them instant credibility, especially like somebody like Hillary. Who's so, seems like she's so out of her mind. She's got the weirdest laugh in history. She will laugh at the most incongruous moments just to let people know that you know, she's above it all or nothing bothers her. So, anyway, we've got a couple of people that are out. I put a note to myself. The only electable person on the Democratic ticket has dropped out, O'Malley. And I don't think that they gave him much of a chance anyway. But Sanders versus Clinton, if Clinton doesn't get indicted, I mean, if Clinton is a strong candidate, she should have been able to take Iowa by storm. The fact that she split it with an open socialist is ridiculous. And he's come up 40 points in the polls to tie her. And if it wasn't for these mysterious six winning coin flips, then they would be tied, you know. And, you know, it's just, if Hillary doesn't get indicted, and from the more stuff that I read, the more I understand that Obama is never going to let her get indicted because this is going to be his third term here. But she's carrying a lot of baggage, and if she doesn't make it, then you've got Sanders, who out of the Democratic Party really wants to support an open socialist, you know? I just don't get it. I don't get where the Democratic Party is headed, and I don't understand, you know, the kind of just the kind of stuff that they're trying. I mean, it's just they've gone to the left, and now they're going even lefter. Are we really going to elect Sanders and transition to a socialist country? I don't think, except for a small percentage of people, you know, there's support for that out there. So, anyway, you've got your results for Iowa. I hope you're satisfied. We got, of course, we've got Walt Rubel coming in a few minutes. But, I mean, it looks like a real race, and I don't think it would be wrong to reduce it down to Rubio and Cruz. And, you know, I think Kasich is living in a fantasy to think that he's going to come back. I don't think Chris Christie's got a shot. You know, Rand Paul is roadkill. I mean, all of these people that probably would be pretty good candidates. I don't know about Chris Christie, but he seems pretty effective, you know. But I think we're down. I think that's probably what we're down to. And, I mean, I think Carson's going to drop out because I don't think that he liked going up in the polls. He didn't enjoy going down in them. But who leaves a campaign to go get a change of clothes? That's crazy. Like Mike says, man, maybe when he saw his numbers, he filled his shorts. But anyway, we've got a horse race on our hands. And New Hampshire, if Trump goes in and sweeps New Hampshire like he's supposed to, he's up by 30 points, we'll get some balance in this thing. And although it was pretty close with Trump and Cruz and Rubio, as the thing kind of plays out, I wonder who Rubio or Trump would choose as a vice president if he kept his national ranking. And somebody told me it was Susana Martinez last night. I'm like, really? They said, yeah. I said, where'd you hear that? And they said, I saw on the internet. I don't know if she's in the mix, but I have not heard anybody say that in the media. But you kind of wonder if Trump would have to take somebody like Quayle, you know, somebody. But, you know, he's a strong guy. He might really want a strong number two to put him in a position to run. There was an interesting article that speculated on what would happen if Hillary was indicted. But I guess I'll play that for you tomorrow. Anyway, we'll take a break at the break of the hour. 1450 KOBE AM Las Cruces. Kelly O'Connell, 523-1450. We'll be back with Walt Rubel.
you right there.
Yes. You ever heard of Tom Scott? Like him? This is an album called New York Connection. Yeah. He started that band. Then they got into an argument. But he must have been a fun guy, you know. He's still around. Yeah. Yes. All right, so. We've got our results from Iowa. We're moving on to New Hampshire, but it is pretty illustrative. We've got Walt Rubel in the studio today. Good morning, Walt.
Good morning.
How's it going?
Well, I love elections. This is exciting.
We've been talking
about the presidential race forever, so now finally some folks have got a chance to vote.
And Trump doesn't win this thing. It's interesting.
Well, I'm not surprised. You know, Iowa is just a different animal, and they talk all the time about how a caucus is different than an election. And Ted Cruz just had an amazing ground game. I know I'm sort of using the cliches that the TV people use, but he had dormitories full of volunteers that he had brought in from all over the country, you know, mostly Texas, but, you know.
Any from Syria?
None that I'm aware of. Mostly retired people living for like a month before the election in a college dorm, going door to door. And it really worked. I mean, the greatest turnout in the history of the Republican or the Iowa caucus. So congratulations for that. Certainly a well-deserved victory. What does it mean moving forward? I think Marco Rubio probably did the best last night of anybody.
Yeah, and I mean, so they say that the GOP establishment is delighted, but there is two Cuban boys, but there is quite a difference between Rubio and Cruz.
Oh, definitely, no question. Rubio is the choice of the establishment. Ted Cruz just doesn't have a lot of friends, and That has worked to his benefit in an election where people are tired of the establishment and want either an outsider or an insider who is acting as an outsider, which I think Ted Cruz qualifies as.
Yeah.
But, you know, now it goes to New Hampshire, and, you know, all of those months of getting ready for Iowa aren't going to help him in New Hampshire. And I still see Donald Trump. I see Donald Trump coming out of this fairly well, too, because all of the pundits were saying, well, if he loses Iowa, he's going to have a meltdown. That's going to be the end of it. You know, wait for the speech after he loses. He's going to go crazy. He's going to call, you know, everybody in Iowa stupid. And he didn't do any of that. He was magnanimous. He acted like a politician.
Well, and also, I mean, the guy's had a life outside of politics where he's done well and he's done poorly. And
yeah.
Obviously, you're not going to be have that kind of relationships and experiences and then act like a baby every time things don't go your way.
But he does project that. But I'm a winner. You know, I'm a winner. I always win. And so people were curious. What happens if you don't win?
Yeah. And I mean, I think he handled himself well. I just saw I stumbled across a little documentary on his plane. It's a 757 and comparing it to Air Force One. It's not as big. It's not quite as fast, but it's a lot more plush.
Yeah, well, that doesn't surprise me. I'm a little surprised it's not like 1 inch bigger. I mean, that would be a Trumpian thing to do.
Well, yeah, they showed, because when one of these documentaries on it, they said it was bigger and nicer than Air Force One. And then they showed a schematic of the planes next to each other, a little sketch. And you could, Air Force One is quite a big, well, it's a 747.
Right. They're made to haul hundreds of people. Yeah, that's right. So the interesting thing to me is, okay, we're going to New Hampshire. You've got Christie, Bush, Kasich, and obviously Rubio has solidified his position.
Yes.
So does the establishment rally behind Rubio now?
They have
to.
Other choice do they have? Who else are they going to bet on?
Well, all three of those guys I've just talked about have staked their – what Ted Cruz did in Iowa, they have done in New Hampshire. They have spent all their time. They put all their eggs in that basket. And so
– All right. Who's going to win New Hampshire?
Donald Trump.
So, I mean, does it matter? So how important is this first view, the Iowa –
No, I think it is important.
It leaves an impression.
It absolutely does. I think for candidates like Mike Huckabee and Ben Carson and Rick Santorum, this has to winnow the field from them, I would think. I mean,
okay, so Huckabee's out.
Yeah, Huckabee is out. That's right.
O'Malley's out.
Okay, I hadn't heard that, but that's right.
And there was, so Carson goes home and gets a change of clothes. I mean, I understand going home.
Yeah.
I don't understand. I mean, that sounds so lame that
right.
Why would you say it even if it was true?
Right. I mean, come up with a better story. I mean, yeah, you're right. No, I mean, Ben Carson, I think his shot was Iowa. You know, people assume that the evangelicals would rally behind them. I think they really do like the man. But I think after the Paris attacks and, you know, San Bernardino, that calculus changed. You know, liking the man and thinking he's a good, decent person wasn't enough anymore.
Well, you know, and I mean, it's hard to have your first taste of politics be a presidential
election. That's right.
That's almost impossible, in my opinion. I mean, Trump is pulling it off because of his enormous experience, in part on TV. But I mean, you know, for somebody like Carson who doesn't, I mean, he came across a number of times as extremely naive, in my opinion.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And then he sort of overstudied. I mean, sort of the classic case of the guy who, you know, spends the next 2 days hitting the books. And
yeah.
So the next time he's asked a question about foreign policy, he's going into all of these
details. So much detail.
Exactly. Exactly.
Which sounded silly, too.
Well, yeah. I mean, it sounded kind of like the classic overachiever. And he is. I mean, and kudos to him for that. You know, no question. He's a hard worker and. But there's an awful lot to learn in an awfully short time, like you say, when you're starting out your first election running for president.
It's like your first race is the Indy 500.
Yeah, that's right. You know? That's right.
So, all right. So, but I mean, you're telling me that Christie and Kasich are holding out for...
I'm curious to see if one of them rises to challenge Rubio for that sort of establishment position. because right now Rubio clearly has his hold on it.
What about Jeb?
He's one of the three. I think between it's Kasich, Jeb Bush, and Chris Christie. One of those three has to emerge. All of those three have put all of their, you know, all of their time, all of their energy into New Hampshire. You know, Chris Christie has spent more time in New Hampshire than he has in New Jersey. He's a sitting governor.
Has he tried to shut any bridges down?
Not that I'm aware of, but that has dogged him to this day. That was just on the newscast before we came on here. So yeah, that hasn't
helped.
Well,
maybe he could shut down the toll paths into New Hampshire and, you know, kind of
rig it that way.
Yeah. Sovereign, set up a sovereign state there. But, you know, Jeb seems like the kind of guy that would choose to wear grandmother waist blue jeans.
Mm.
Don't you see him and he wears these old fashioned sweater, like the thing with the curled up necks and stuff. And it's like, dude, is nobody giving you fashion?
Right,
you look like a tourist, you know, you look like an American tourist that's standing underneath the Eiffel Tower staring up with your mouth open. He just doesn't look, I don't know.
I hear you. But for all of that, I just think it wasn't his year. I mean, for a lot of different reasons, you know, he came into this with all the money in the world. He tried to, and that was the way his brother did it. You know, you tie up all the money, you tie up all the big funders at the very start of the process. And you just sort of squeeze everybody out.
And it was going to be Hillary versus Bush, Jeb, right?
Well, that was what everybody dreaded. Yeah, another Bush versus Clinton election. Let's get excited for that.
Let me ask you, does this outcome with General Sanders, a punch for punch, if this was a heavyweight fight,
right?
Nobody would accept a round being decided by a toss of a coin, right? I mean, because we have six cases where they had to toss a coin and Clinton wins all of them. I mean, what are the chances?
Yeah, that race was fascinating. To me, that was more interesting than the Republican race.
Of course it was. But, because there's more drama. I mean,
right.
I kept getting up and refreshing my browser to see what the change in the votes was.
Well, and you had Hillary declaring victory in the third quarter, basically, which was interesting.
Well, maybe she'll inspire Peyton.
Oh, let's hope so. Let's hope so.
Because if anybody is beaten up and beaten down more than Peyton, it's Hillary right now. I think all the stuff she's been through.
No, I think that's right. Although I don't think the email thing hurt her. I don't think that was what led to this result.
When it says, you know, we got emails that are so high level, you can't even say what.
I know. And
doesn't that hurt her?
And if she gets nominated, yes, in the general election, it will. In the Democratic primary,
right.
I don't think it does.
It's not an issue. Does it hurt her that you've got an out-and-out open socialist going, I mean, round for round with her? Doesn't that hurt? I mean, I know got up and announced her winning, but doesn't that hurt her?
Here's what I think hurts her. All of the excitement on the Democratic side is behind Bernie Sanders.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the youth.
All of it.
Yeah.
All of it. Nobody, and it's amazing to me. Young women, I think, have made the decision that, of course, a woman's going to be president. If it's not Hillary, it'll be the next one or one after that. Mm-hmm. And so they don't see this as the historic accomplishment that I think women in their 50s and older do.
Yeah. It's inevitable.
That's what they see it as. And I was watching a lot of the caucus last night where on the Democratic side, you would have sworn it was a campus, you know, a college. I mean, all of them were in their young 20s or late teens. And all of them were excited for Bernie Sanders. I saw one, Jim, and the Democrats are so goofy the way they do it in Iowa. They cluster together. And there was, you know, this gym where you had this huge group of people for Bernie Sanders and like nine people over there for Hillary Clinton. And the visuals of that are just sort of embarrassing.
What was the breakdown?
A huge group for Bernie and like eight or nine for Hillary. And she did eventually, the way they do it in Iowa, like I said, is so goofy, especially on the Democratic side, that you have to get 15% to be considered viable to get any of the delegates at all. And by the end of the night, she was viable in that race, and so she got a delegate or two. You know, in terms of the real math coming out of this, Hillary will get all of the superdelegates. they will tie, or she may get one more of the elected delegates.
All right. I was trying to find a number on this, but the number of delegates available for the Democrats is 44.
Okay.
In Iowa. So how many does she get?
If I remember that right, it's, I think, 22 and 22. But then there are, like I said, I think 9 superdelegates.
What's a superdelegate?
A superdelegate is somebody who is like a party leader. And it's this very fixed thing that is very undemocratic. And it really did come into play during the election 8 years ago, because Hillary Clinton had a majority of the superdelegates. Barack Obama had the vast majority of the popular delegates. And there was this real concern that the elite of the party, being the superdelegates, would swing it in favor of Hillary. And, of course, that would, you know, fly in the face of democracy. And that didn't happen. But the system is set up in such a way that it would allow it to happen.
All right. You've got Twitter berating Clinton campaign for preemptively declaring victory in Iowa caucus. Quote, she's a liar.
Yeah. See, that's the thing. I mean, it feeds into that narrative that you can't trust her.
Sanders rally chant. She's a liar.
Yeah.
She's a liar. Hillary's a liar. All right. So, but I mean, how does she win? Lips? That doesn't make any sense. It just sounds like, I don't care how they do it, it sounds like the goose is cooked ahead of time.
Well, there's no question. As much as the Republican establishment doesn't want Cruz and Trump, the Democratic establishment really, really wants Hillary and doesn't want Bernie Sanders.
Well, you can't win a general election with an open socialist, can you?
That's the assumption. Well, we may find out.
What's your opinion?
My opinion is no, but I have been very surprised by how well Bernie Sanders has done. I mean, I think when people listen to him, he's able to explain his positions. And I've said on this program before that I think he clearly grew dissatisfied with the Democratic Party and made the decision that he wanted to break from them. Now, why he didn't just declare himself an independent, why he took that next step and said, I'm a Democratic socialist. You know, clearly he was making a statement there that has not hurt him in Vermont. And if his intention is to, you know, spend the rest of his life as a senator for Vermont, I think that will be fine. I don't think the country will elect somebody who, but, you know, I have been wrong about Donald Trump this whole time, and I've been wrong about Bernie Sanders this whole time.
All right. Okay. On that note, anything is, this is a campaign where anything's possible. 720, I'm here with Walt Rubel, the, what is it, vice president?
Yeah, vice president, editorial page editor.
AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE, 523-1450, and Tom Scott. Hey, you remember Starsky and Hutch?
Oh, who doesn't remember Starsky?
Here's the theme, Tom Scott. Kelly O'Connell, we'll be right back with Walt Rubel. We're going to continue to pick through the detritus of yesterday's astonishing Iowa outcome. So we're here with Walt and kind of talking about this race. So what happens in New Hampshire?
Well, Bernie wins big. I think Donald Trump wins, you know, comfortably. And like we were saying before, the real race, I think, is for number two. If Cruz finishes second, and especially if Rubio doesn't have a strong showing, I think there's a real fear among some in the Republican establishment that becomes a two-way race.
I'm assuming not a Republican, but what do you think about in terms of the impact on the party? Positive?
Well, I've always assumed negative, but I'm starting to change my tune on that. Especially with Donald Trump. I think with Cruz, his appeal is limited. I think Donald Trump plays in blue states. I think he plays in purple states. I think
he plays in red states.
No, he does. Now, I also think that he has a ceiling, but his ceiling keeps seeming to inch up. So,
I like you say, as you see Donald Trump in situations where he's lost and he's reasonable, and he gave a gracious speech. He got up and he thanked Iowa. He said he loved him. He was going to buy a farm there.
Yeah.
And then he thanked his family. And it's the first, I think it's the first time I've heard him really go into it, but he had his whole family there.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was just a very gracious speech, but I think it's also a speech given by somebody who knows that they're going to be have some victories in the near future.
Clearly, yeah. No, he was not shaken by this, and he shouldn't be. Like I said, Ted Cruz spent an enormous amount of time and money and had an army of volunteers working for him and did a terrific job. I mean, he did an historic job. Nobody has ever turned out to vote in Iowa the way that Ted Cruz did. And so kudos to him for that. But at the end of the day, he still only gets, you know, a little bit more than a third of the delegates. I mean, that's the thing. Iowa isn't a winner-take-all race.
He got eight, right? Or nine?
I think he got nine.
Nine, eight, and eight?
I think that's right. He got nine. Trump and Rubio both got eight.
I mean, you know, if you break it down, that's not a huge victory.
No, that's what I'm saying. And so despite these enormous numbers in terms of raw votes, yeah, you're still only getting nine delegates, and the guy who you have to beat is only one behind you.
523-1450 if you want to comment on your candidate or your reaction. But so how much did this go according to what you thought was going to play out?
Pretty much. Now, the polls were all suggesting that Trump would win, and I was kind of buying into that a little bit. There's some conjecture about whether skipping the debate might have hurt him. It didn't seem like it at the time, but maybe Iowa voters took offense to that. I don't know.
It's possible. Now, I've got an article from the Daily Beast here that I don't know if you had a chance to read it, and I'm obviously not going to read it myself here, but I just opened it up to the headline, Ted Cruz's Surreal Last Stand.
Yeah.
And, you know, with the details of him going out, I think is a very long article, to the extent that he won, I would attribute at least part of that to churches.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, a big part of it.
Yeah.
And that's honestly, I'm a little surprised that Donald Trump did as well as he did for that exact reason. You know, I thought the 2 Corinthians thing would hurt him. I thought, you know, but Jerry Falwell Jr. comes out and says, well, no, we're not worried about that. We're not looking for the most knowledgeable biblical scholar. We're looking for, you know, somebody who shares our values and we'll get in and fight for him. And
the thing that I've noticed about Trump is he seems absolutely fearless.
Yes.
About defending the things that he wants to defend, whether it's Sarah Palin or the Bible or whatever. And I think people see that. People see Christians and conservatives in this country as cowering, even celebrities often cowering to defend the things that they ought to be able to do in a semi-conscious state, you know?
Well, no, I'm not sure I follow you on
well,
that.
Well, I mean, for a lot of Christians, there's always kind of a in defending their, or at least their, the, okay, let's put it this way.
Yeah.
The leadership of the conservative movement has to, at some level, be comfortable with defending the Bible because, to a large extent, people who are conservatives, there's a slice of those that are either Christians or they're...
Yeah, huge slice.
Yeah. So a true leader for that movement has got to be able to easily and enthusiastically defend the Bible, its ideas and stuff. And I think that conservatives have felt for the last few decades that there have been very few leaders who could do that comfortably. And it's bothered them a great deal.
Well, George W. Bush certainly could.
Yeah, he could. But, and I mean, maybe I'm accepting the presidency out of here, but
yeah.
I think that there is a fear of political correctness to the point where people are afraid to defend the things that they rationally, you know, that they've come to some sort of a rational support of and a well-meaning support. There's, yeah, so they see Trump as someone who is able to, without breaking a sweat,
yeah,
state what he likes and defend it.
No, I completely agree with that. And you used the term fearless earlier, and I think that is absolutely a big part of his appeal.
Yeah.
You know, this is a guy who has got skin, the thickest rhino hide it would seem.
Yeah.
I mean, because he just takes these slings and arrows and keeps pressing on.
I saw him do an amazing thing one time. He was getting interviewed, and this woman says, well, people are starting to get pissed at you.
Yeah.
And she's criticizing him, mm-hmm. and he stops her and says, do we need to recut that with another word? I mean, are they going to let the censor's going to let it on? And I thought the way that he handled it was such a plume, and he wasn't offended. And I'm like, this guy really knows how to interact with the media.
He does. That is his gift. I mean, I think above everything else, the give and take with the media, he's just very good at
that.
What
does the media think of Trump?
The media is astounded by Trump. The media, I think on one hand they love him because he's a great interview, and you know he drives ratings up.
And he's not trite. He does not repeat himself.
No, that's true. And he does a little bit.
Well,
I mean, Jeb Bush was low energy. You know,
maybe these what Scott Adams calls his verbal kill shot vocabulary, but he doesn't use canned speeches. He doesn't use a teleprompter.
Right. That's right. He gets up there and speaks off the cuff and from the heart. You get the sense. And that does appeal to people.
All right. So what are we going to come back and talk about? What do you want to get into?
Well, we can get in. The legislature's halfway through.
Right.
We could talk about that.
All right. Kelly O'Connell here with Walt Rubel and from the Sun News, AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE. 523-1450. We'll be gears a little bit into the legislature. All right. So, we were talking. Can we talk about this a little bit on
sure.
the air?
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
Okay. So I'm saying to Walt, you know, going forward, who's got the shot? And Walt is basically saying he thinks Trump is well positioned. And I say, well, you know, what about Cruz and the fact that he pulled this off?
Yeah.
Now, you feel like he put all of his ammo. This is, you know, whatever you want to call it, is his Alamo or whatever.
Yeah, no, I think that's right. I don't know if it was his last stand, but it was certainly his biggest and best stand, I think. I mean,
if that was true, would it have been worth it to show people that he's the front runner?
Well, that's what he's trying to do. But the question is, does he come out of Iowa with the momentum of a front runner? And I don't think he does. I think New Hampshire voters sort of have this history of not wanting to confirm whatever the Iowa voters do.
So is there a little bit of person is a what do you call it? They go against they swim against the tide.
Yeah, right, right.
But doesn't that create its own tide?
Well, we were talking off the air about the likability factors of Donald Trump.
So I brought up Reagan and I said
right.
I was first saying had this lady that called up, which is Donna, who was very enthusiastic about Cruz and hem of the garment type of support, and more than a candidate, he's a statesman, he's not a politician. And then I said, but you know, to achieve what he wants to, he doesn't have to piss everybody off.
Yeah, no, that's right.
And that Reagan got people to change their positions on issues and be glad to do it and be glad to take part with him. He didn't piss everybody off.
That's, I think, the biggest problem Ted Cruz has is that thus far, the only coalitions he's been able to build in Congress have been in the House. And that's a problem when you're a senator.
Yes.
There are 100 members of that body. Thus far, not one of them have come out and said, Ted's our guy.
But I mean, you know, well, he's got, I guess Mike Lee is a compadre.
Well, but he hasn't endorsed him either.
That's weird.
Yes, that is weird.
The person who helped get him into the Senate is Sarah Palin, and she didn't back him. She backed Trump.
That's another good point. Yeah.
That was strange.
Well, and I just get the sense, we were talking about comparing him to Reagan, and maybe that's not a fair comparison.
Well, I mean, I'm saying because this lady had said, was telling the story, this lady had called up and said he was a statesman, and then I said, what's his statesman-like activity? And I thought, I think statesmanship is something that you say in retrospect over a politician's career. This person really stepped it up. They really took it in a direction where it wasn't self-serving,
right,
where they really served the country, where they really achieved something. That's not something that you say as someone is entering. You say it when they're leaving.
No, I agree with that. And the other thing I would say is statesmanship typically means the ability to bring people together.
Yeah.
And Ronald Reagan had that. I mean, I'm not a big Ronald Reagan fan, but I recognize that he had that quality.
He had the lovable quality.
And he did.
Rubio's kind of a lovable, but Rubio's lovable like a squeeze toy.
Yeah, I think
little
that
teddy
maybe
bear.
That'd be true.
But yeah, I love listening to Rubio. He's so enthusiastic. He's so earnest. It's like a Boy Scout showing up at your doorstep saying, "Will you support our, we're going up to Mount Shasta."
No, you're exactly right. It comes off to me as very young and very earnest and very young. I'm getting to the age where Marco Rubio seems to me to be very, certainly very enthusiastic and a smart guy. No question about that, but not seasoned, not tested. So that concerns me.
But Reagan, Reagan was, at least from the right, Reagan was a statesman, but Reagan achieved stuff that was audacious and he pulled it off.
Well, he did. And the other thing that we were talking about is the fact that Reagan genuinely liked people and people genuinely liked
and
him
that's
back.
And that's a huge, huge advantage. And if you've got that in your pocket, that's got to help you in politics. We've got a call here. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connor Show. Who's this?
This is Roger.
Roger, good morning to you. Hope you're well. And what's on your mind?
I just like to make a quick statement about
go.
You know, the old historical quote that as Iowa goes, the country goes.
Okay.
Just like to mention that.
Is it still true? Is it still true though?
I'm hoping.
Yeah, no, it's not. Is he
I got my fingers crossed.
We didn't have Rick Huckabee, and we did Rick Santorum, I'm sorry, and Mike Huckabee were the last two nominees out of Iowa.
Yeah, so can you cross your toes for a little extra?
Well that makes it even better because eventually it's going to come back. Right?
The law of averages is on your side.
Forget about it.
Maybe
it's
so.
It's time to get back on track.
I guess so. Anything else?
I'd just like to say that I never really was a big fan of Reagan. And I don't understand how people can put him up so high when he couldn't even get along with his kids. Even his kids, he had problems with them.
Well, King David didn't get along with his kids. They tried to kill him, and he's considered a great leader. I don't know. That's a little bit touchy. I mean, you can't control what your kids do. I think a lot of these people that are super successful, Roger, kids look at what they've done. They can't really believe it, and it causes rebellion. I mean, how many people are world-class leaders, are famous, or, become super successful? I think it does put a little strain on the family, doesn't it?
Yeah, that's true. I got to admit, that's true. Hey, could I make one quick
comment? Briefly.
Well, hey, Kelly, you're always talking about, how President Obama, he thinks he's the brightest and he's the greatest. And Hillary Clinton, she does whatever she wants, regardless of this or that.
Okay.
But then I look at it and I say, you could be describing Donald Trump also.
Oh, well. Possibly.
It's almost ludicrous.
Is Trump think he's the brightest person in the room?
Clearly.
Does he think he can get away with anything?
Clearly.
Yes.
Well, maybe he's fit for the office then.
It just sometimes I think about it, I hear it, and I'm like, it's just ludicrous sometimes. It's funny.
But, I mean, look, we all the old saying, it's easier to get forgiveness than permission.
Yeah.
We all like people that have a certain audacity, that have a little sense of aplomb or panache and can get away with stuff that's funny, amusing, or were kind of breathtaking. I think that, that Trump falls in that category.
Well, you either like it or you're offended by it.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. So,
all right. Thanks for the call. Have a good day. All right, folks. I got some weather here for you. And I think Walt has got a little commentary on the state Senate, which is, it's like a mayfly. It lives and dies pretty quickly.
Yeah, it does. A 30-day session. Yeah. It goes quickly.
We'll be right back. AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE, Kelly O'Connell, 523, 1450. We'll be back to talk about the state house. The state house and Senate. All right, we're here with Walt Rubel, 747 flying the friendly skies. And all right, so what's happening in the state house, the roundhouse?
Yeah, we are almost at our half. Well, we are exactly at our halfway point. At noon in 2 weeks from today, it will shut the whole thing down. They are really struggling because of the low gas and oil prices. They came into this session thinking they'd have $230 million. In new money to be able to spend, and now they've got none, and there's some real concern that you know, maybe even a flat budget will mean coming back later in the year and finding other places to cut. So the budget is a real concern. Medicaid spending is driving some of that. The way the Federal Affordable Health Care Act was set up, in the first couple of years, the feds paid all of the money for local people signing on to the Medicaid program. Now some of that obligation is starting to shift over to the states. At some point in time, I think it goes up to 10%. And so, you know, that's a big hit on the budget, right, when they really can't afford to have it. So that's the big thing. A 30-day session is always primarily a budget session. The other big issue this year is the driver's license issue. That has come out of the House. The bill that Andy Nunez from Hatch is sponsoring, along with Paul Pacheco from Albuquerque, that's the one that would allow for a one-year driver privilege card if you were in the country illegally. But everybody else would have to reapply. You'd have to go back into the MVD. You'd have to show them a birth certificate and a Social Security card or some kind of equivalent documents. And everybody would have to go through that step. And so the Senate has a bill where they're saying, no, we want to give people a choice, which I kind of like better myself. I don't know if the governor will support that. She insists that it would still leave us in violation of federal real ID, which I don't think is right. I mean, anybody who wanted to be in compliance would be able to. So I'm not sure what her argument is there. You know, but there are 2 weeks to go. This is a very short session. There's not a lot of time to get things done. I don't think the bill that Andy Nunez and Pacheco, as it is, I don't think that will pass in the Senate. I don't think it'll even make it to the Senate floor. And so the question for me is there any room to give on the House Republican side, or is it their position that, you know, we have given all we can to reach this compromise, which is a significant step from where they were last year. You have to acknowledge that. I don't know the answer to that, but I do know that if both sides take the position that they're at now, it won't get passed.
So what do you predict?
I think that I'm hoping that there will be compromise. But I also know that the Secretary of Homeland Security, did not do his cause any favors when he came out right before the legislature started and said, we're not going to impose this on commercial airline until 2018, because that was the big one. I mean, the thing about not being able to go into federal buildings and not being able to go on to, you know, the labs and the bases, most people aren't going to be affected by that. And if you're a contractor, something like that, you can work that out. So I think when he came out with that announcement that we're not going to do commercial airlines until 2018, the Democrats said, okay, well, the pressure's off. We don't have to deal with this.
All right. We do have a phone call. Thanks for the call. The Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
This is Jerry. I got a question for you, Kelly.
Go ahead.
What does the actual ID law, you know, the real ID law say, and how is that going to affect if you do have two sets of IDs out there, and the law says, no, you can't have two. How is that going to affect people like truck drivers and such that have to go on sometimes on military bases or secure places to deliver loads?
That's a great question. Thank you. All right, Walt?
Yeah, it's a very good question. It really depends on what gets passed. If the Senate plan gets passed, then if you are a truck driver or somebody like that, you would naturally want to get the real ID. So you would go through, you would jump through the hoops. You would reapply for your driver's license. And in terms of what they would look like, my understanding is the House bill would clearly identify the driver permit card as you know, somebody who was in the country illegally. And that is another one of the sticking points. Now, I will say that for my opinion, I have less sympathy for them on that point.
Truck drivers?
No, for immigrants. They're saying if we can be identified in this way by our card, then that will make us, you know, more susceptible to deportation. It'll make us less likely to, you know, go to law enforcement, things like that. I don't think that's true. I understand those concerns. I also think that, listen, you are here illegally, and you know, the whole state can't be inconvenienced in order to take care of that concern.
Okay, thanks a lot, and we'll be right back, folks. One more round of these beautiful ads and a little comedy here for you first. Kelly with Walt Rubel, and we'll be right back. How to know you're fat.
I got some clues to let you know you're big if you don't know you're big. If this used to be ab, ab, now you got one ab, you a big dude, though. If you get winded doing everyday activities, I was on my cell phone the other day, my boy's like, dog, are you running? No, actually, I was standing still. I was just... If your bath towel don't fit no more. Remember back when you were small, you could put your bath towel on, walk around the house with no hands? Now you done got big, you got a hole in that mug right here. All that leg be out. You be complaining, baby, I think you're shrinking these towels now.
Hey, it's Kelly.
Hey, just a question off air, Kelly. Is this going to affect
Kelly,
people
who's
go on to White Sands for the Bataan Death March?
It's Kelly. Who's this?
It's Karen. Can you hear me?
Hey, it's Kelly.
Can you hear me? Kelly, can you hear me?
It's Kelly. Who's there?
Yeah, look down. A lot of times that I'll hear somebody calls like three or four times, then you can hear somebody. Something is like you're feeling it.
Kelly, who's this?
Is this better? Can you hear me?
It's Kelly. Hello.
Can you hear me? Hello. Phone.
Hey, it's Kelly. Who's this? Speak up, please. Hello? Salt a little bit of comedy into the show. Because, yeah. I don't know who these people are. I just found a website that has got quick maps. Some of it's pretty ethnic. All right, it's Kelly here, and somebody called in four times while we were off the air and didn't speak. I guess they didn't speak. Thanks for the call, the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Well, it wasn't me that called four times. Well, let me tell you something. Good morning, Kelly. Good morning, Walt.
Morning.
That's the only thing that crazy Canadian is going to win is what he just got in Iowa. That's for sure on that.
And?
I think that's right.
How about the Dems?
Well, okay, Bernie, he's cooking. Listen, I'm telling you, you know, he reminds me, you know, he's like the kind-looking uncle that knows everything. He's almost like giving you that impression, like Miracle on 34th Street, you know, with that Santa Claus kind of fellow. All the kids loved him,
yeah.
You know, stuff like that. And I think under the circumstances, just because he's somewhat of a socialist, he's not a dyed-in-the-wool, but somewhat of a socialist. Once anybody becomes president, they get kind of tempered down a bit. Not a problem.
Can he win in the South, though? I mean, that, the assumption is that, that, you know, once this thing moves down, it's South Carolina and you know, all those southern states, that that's the end of Bernie. Do you agree with that?
Well, yeah, unfortunately, it is. It is kind of, you know, writing on the wall.
Yeah.
I mean, I'd like to see it. I mean, you know, legitimately, and I'm sure you know, Walt, because you're very, very erudite. The point being is that the top 15 nations of the world that have the highest quality of living
are socialists, right?
Yeah.
That is the biggest crock of feces I've ever heard.
No, it isn't, Kelly. I send you all these informative emails, and you just—I don't know what you do with this.
I had to get them. I had to put them in the spam folder. There were tens of thousands of pages coming in daily. We're out of time. Call back tomorrow.
Okay.
Have a good day. Bye bye.
Bye, Frankie.
All right. So we got 30 seconds, man. Go for it.
Well, listen, it's election season. I love it. I wish New Mexico would move their primary up so that we could be a part of this thing.
Yeah.
But it's exciting. People are voting, and you know, we will have a new leader. So that's always
especially now. Yeah. Thanks for tuning in. Kelly O'Connell here with Walt Rubel and AM Las Cruces 1450 KOBE. We'll see you back tomorrow. Have a great day. We'll take you out with a little Tom Scott. Ciao.